She's reclusive, a mystery. She communicates in type. A family trip was planned, with the Antarctic in sight.
One day, she's gone, disappeared without a trace. It's up to her daughter, a reality to face.
An enigma to solve, Bee was dead set.
Where did you go, Bernadette?
Cool.
I mean, you heard it here first, folks.
I did it.
Brittany eating the microphone, which she did.
I did it.
Yeah. Yeah, she did. Good.
Big mouth. I could fit my fist in my mouth.
Okay.
I'm not doing it
now. Oh, darn it. I got excited.
I feel like there's lotion on my hands.
Oh, anyways, yeah. Probably not a good idea.
What are we doing tonight?
Well, unfortunately, we're not talking about eating microphones today. I mean, I know that's what you thought, listeners, but no.
What's
we're talking.
What's the nutritional value of a microphone?
Well, I'm going to say
nothing.
Yeah. So let's talk about Where'd You Go, Bernadette, part four, shall we? The part titled Invaders.
Ooh. Oh, I forgot.
Space Invaders?
This.
Just kidding.
Yeah. Oh, that yeah. This goes from 0 to 100, just like fucking Elixir. Go from just a normal thing to invaders.
Oh, man.
Of a fourth kind.
Shit's getting real.
Oh, this is so funny how it begins with.
Yeah.
Do you remember this?
Yes. It's, yeah.
So, it starts on Monday, December 20th, with a police report filed by the night manager of the Westin Hotel against our good friend, Audrey.
Audrey, how we love thee. Just kidding.
Oh, my God. So, Audrey is, oh, God. She's like, if you ever worked in customer service, she's the type of person that you despise
yes.
and talk about for years after
yep.
they're gone out of your life.
Yep.
So the police had to be called against Audrey Griffin because she is freaking out at the night manager, like, constantly.
She's going insane.
She's so nuts.
Yeah. I knew she was, like, kind of crazy, but, like, when this happened, I was like, oh my God, like that did go from 1 to 100 basically. Mm-hmm. They're reporting her because after this whole incident when she's freaking out, she ends up getting kind of violent.
Yes. So there's a party going on in the room next door and she calls to complain. And the night manager is like, there's no one in that room, but I'll go check it out. Right? And turns out to be her son.
Yep. And, okay, I marked this part because it's like saying...
fucking Kyle.
Yes. Oh, Kyle. It says, Mr. Koenig, which I think is the...
The night manager.
Yeah. Reports that Ms. Griffin, wearing a hotel robe, approached him in the hallway and strongly suggested he was knocking on the wrong door as room 1605 belonged to her son, Kyle, who was asleep. Like, still in denial. Like, this, like... Excuse me, but this bitch... Like,
oh God! Almighty.
She just doesn't get it. I just, oh my gosh, so much in denial about her son.
What page is that on? I want to see that.
That's on page 174. It's number 8.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Nice to have numbers here to help mm-hmm. us.
Yeah. So I don't know if you've ever like written a police report before or mm-hmm. like read one.
No.
I've had to do something very similar.
Yeah.
When I was an RA,
okay.
And they tell you you have to write every report in third person. So, and then, like, list the incidents that are happening, just so
okay.
it's a...
So you distance yourself, kind of?
Yeah, so, okay. like, if I went and knocked on the door because I assumed it was, like, partying and everyone was smoking weed, just like this incident, mm-hmm. I would, like, Brittany went down the fourth floor hallway to room 402 and knocked properly. Brittany waited 5 minutes to, like,
okay.
that type of stuff. It
that
sucks.
Makes sense, yeah.
I
well.
Hate it. Anyway, So, number 8, it was the wrong room. Number 9, Audrey is, like, freaking out and calling him an idiot and a moron and an incompetent dummy and, like, all this type of stuff. Number 10, she's calling the place a dump and a flea bag and a pig hole. And,
oh my
like, it just
God.
Keeps going on and on.
Yeah.
She's fucking irate.
Yeah. And... when he's trying to quiet both husband and wife, Mr. Griffin belched, emitting a nasty stench.
Yeah, because Warren comes out to try to, like, calm his wife down.
Yes, he does. And then she got in her husband's face regarding his abuse of alcohol and insatiable appetite for steak.
Jesus Christ.
What?
What a fucking mess.
So then Warren goes back inside room 1601, slams the door.
Mm-hmm.
And then Miss Griffin starts saying, in stating her extreme displeasure with the person who invented alcohol.
Can you imagine being the night manager? You're literally standing in this hall and there's a domestic dispute right now, and then everything's going, it's like, and I fucking hate this person who invented alcohol, and I would never be in this situation if, like, oh my god, I can't imagine. Yeah. Those monks back in the 12th century, I don't know who invented alcohol.
That's okay, yeah.
I know Vikings have it. It was true. Mead. They fermented honey.
I mean, yeah, alcohol has been around for a very long time.
Yeah,
so,
ever since they were fruit.
Yes, true, very true. Mm-hmm. I'm doing it. What?
I don't know. Okay, anyway. But did you know that animals routinely get drunk?
Really?
Yeah, because they eat like fermented apples and stuff.
Ah.
And it gets them drunk accidentally. It's absolutely adorable.
Yes, it is. Oh my gosh, I love that. He reports that out of nowhere, my head jerked back because that crazy bitch, Miss Griffin, had grabbed hold of his hair and yanked, causing him distress and pain.
Mm-hmm. So that was the night manager going to open the door of 1605.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Where Kyle is at and yes. Where this party is going on.
So then he radios Seattle PD.
Mm-hmm.
And while on the radio, Miss Griffin entered room 1605 and emitted a scream. And he enters the room as well and counted 9 individuals, Miss Griffin's son, Kyle Griffin, and assorted Seattle street
youth.
All right. Oh, my God. So then, sorry, I just got distracted because I can hear my mom vacuuming upstairs.
So funny. So the night manager observed drug paraphernalia everywhere from bongs and... I don't know any of
Epic
a lot of
vape.
These bindles, rolling papers, prescription drug bottles, roach clips, one hitters,
pinchies,
rigs, works, spoons, and an epic vape. Holy shit! When I listened to that part, I was like, oh my god, I don't know what half of this stuff is.
Nope. And so,
what the hell is a roach clip?
I have no idea.
I know a roach is another form for a joint, like another word
for
a joint.
I actually did not know that.
Well, there you go.
The more you know. Look, it wasn't until college. This is kind of sad, but I was naive. No, well, that too. But I didn't know that weed, pot, and marijuana were the same thing.
Oh, no, Danielle.
I was a very naive child. What can I say?
I love you.
Here's a story. My roommate was obviously it was a dry campus, no drugs on campus, no alcohol.
Mm.
If we were caught in our room, if our roommate was doing drugs, we would also be kicked out of the university.
That's dumb.
Well, I just told you my inexperience of knowledge about drugs. They were literally rolling joints in our room, and I was sitting there and I was watching and I was like, I am pretty sure I am in a situation right now where they are rolling drugs and I should tell them to get out. I didn't, but I did one time. They just, my roommate
oh
had
my God,
alcohol in our
so
fridge.
Fucking funny.
If they raided our fridge, I would have been kicked out of the school.
Well, they have to let you know when they're going to raid your fridge.
Well, yeah, that's true. But yeah, so my roommate had alcohol and they just sat in the middle of the room and I'm like,
listen, I was an RA and I had alcohol in my room.
That's okay. I just didn't want to be kicked out of the university. But, you know.
Oh, my God. I got drunk in my dorm the one time. And I was in an all-freshman dorm. My girlfriend came up. And we were just drinking iced tea and vodka.
Yeah.
So we were stumbling all around. My residents were down there. And
oh my
God. It was so, like, looking back, it's super embarrassing.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad no one reported me for it.
Aw. They loved you.
No, they didn't. They hated me.
Really?
I was a hard ass RA.
Mm. Ours weren't. I don't think.
Yeah, only because I liked a quiet floor. You know, I didn't like being woken up in the middle of the night because of partying. This one time, these two girls were coming back at like 3 a.m. They were drunk off their minds, and I heard them because I was studying for an exam. And this is when I was a senior. So, and I was worked in an all-freshman dorm. Mm. So, I was done.
Right,
like,
right.
I had enough of all of this. So, I went to their room, and they were playing their music so loudly at 3 a.m. So, that right there is going to cause me to come in, but I just heard them in general. So, they opened their door, and their faces fall, and I saw bottles in their room. I said, get all your fucking bottles right now. And they're opening their closet, their refrigerator, their pool. And I was like, you're coming with me. And I made them flush it down the toilet. I was like, pour out that alcohol right now and flush it. Mm-hmm. And like, you could just see how upset they were. Mm-hmm. Because I think there are also education majors. So if you get caught for underage for education, you can't continue.
Right, right.
So they flushed it all and I made them throw the stuff in the recycling bin. And I said, if I ever hear a peep from you for the rest of the semester, I swear to God, I'm going to come down on you with a fucking hammer because I am tired. I am a senior. I am finishing up my semester. And I was like, that is it.
Right.
I didn't hear a peep from him for the rest of the... It was second semester and it was like 2 months until the end of the year. But like, they didn't make a peep for the rest of the time. I said, that's I don't care if you fuck up your life anywhere else. Don't do it on my floor.
Right. Good for you. You're assertive like that. If I'd be like, I'd be terrible, all right? Well, actually, the older I get, the better I would be, actually.
Yeah.
But our floor wasn't that... We didn't have that much of a problem on our floor, to be honest. Good. I mean, my roommate, she wasn't too bad, but there were times where she came back drunk. They decided to make some popcorn, turn all the lights on. Like, I'm the quiet person, much more quiet even then. So I was like, oh my God. It was a terrible first semester. Not like terrible. Like I look back and I'm like, it was the worst time of my life. It just wasn't the best.
Yeah.
My roommate and I just, it wasn't a friendship type of situation, but it's funny. Cause at my old job, can't say who we worked with, but we worked with a company that, apparently this girl, she now works for my first roommate.
Oh really?
And she had put her name, this new person's working there, and they said her name, full name, and I'm like, pretty sure that's my roommate. So then I went, I forget how, but I think she had her LinkedIn and her email address.
Yeah.
So I went to it and it had her picture and everything, and I told him, I was like, that's my old roommate.
So funny.
And that was just ironic. So I'm glad she's doing well for herself. She got her act together. But she even told me, she's like, yeah, I used to smoke pot in high school, but not anymore. And then they're like a week later, they're rolling joints.
Oh my God. That's so funny.
Oh, the stories I could tell.
Second semester, sophomore year. That's when I had my own room until my super senior.
See, that's nice.
Semester.
Oh, so you were a super senior.
Yeah, my friend was for one semester.
Oh, that's not bad, though.
Yeah, no.
My friend was a super senior for two more, so she did two more a whole year. Sometimes you have to. I'm lucky. I almost had to. I got lucky. Mm-hmm. But, college. Anyway.
Anyway. So, you know who's not going to college? Kyle.
Probably not.
So, the police come in and they raid everything, and the night manager... wants to press charges against Mrs. Griffin, and the police officer basically says, yeah, that's fine. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the narration continued by the officer, and this one made me laugh so hard. I informed Mrs. Griffin that if she did not lower her voice and step into the hallway with me, I would have to put her in handcuffs. Mrs. Griffin started screaming at me with profanity. Profanity. I am a model citizen. These druggies are the ones breaking the law and corrupting my son.
Oh, Audrey.
Your damn hands off me. You can't touch me. I didn't do anything wrong.
I have to say, when I read this, I knew Audrey was insane. Did not expect something like this to happen.
Whoop-dee-doo. It's my word against his. Who's the judge going to believe? The wife of a DA or the...
crowned king of the pig hole.
She's the type of woman... Oh, person, rather.
Yeah, yeah.
I just love to see fall.
Mm-hmm. It did feel kind of like when I was like, I did not expect this to happen, but I can't say I'm sad about it, you know? yay. And then right after, we get an email from her to Sue Lynn. She doesn't say anything about this.
No.
So that was interesting.
Not a single thing.
Because she is just...
And she's all, happy again.
Yes, she's very chipperish. Just very...
hey, stranger. I know it's been a while, but remember that time you were going to get divorced?
Yes!
And, dredging up this past... And she did that before, very early on in their email correspondence.
Yep, you're right.
Well, don't worry. I'm going to come visit. You promised that I could.
Oh, that's this part. Yeah. I was wondering if we had already gone past this. Okay, yeah.
I looked for you at drop-off today. Lincoln told me you were working such long hours and didn't even have a Christmas tree. But don't worry. I'll come over and I'll decorate for you. What do you want for dinner?
Oh, my God.
I'm already here.
Yes. She literally says, here's your chance. I'll let myself in with the key under the Cupid. One question. Oh, and that's when you said, what do you want for dinner? I'm going to have the feast waiting for you when you get home.
Blessings, you.
Oh, God. Sickening. So then Elgin writes to Sulin, and it's actually a very short little email. He's talking about what he learned about from the agent about Bernadette, and
from Elgin to Sulin. Yeah.
And so he says,
how did she know?
So I'll just read the whole thing. It's so short.
She was in the meeting, wasn't she?
I think so. Do you want me to just
go ahead?
Okay, it says, I realize that everything you just learned in that meeting with Agent Strang was an awful lot to lay on you, way outside of your job description, but I was completely overwhelmed and couldn't face that briefing alone. As stunned as I was and as stunned as I still am, I'm also incredibly grateful that Agent Strang finally allowed you to be present. I'm even more grateful to you for standing by my side. So...
this is fucking... I'm angry. I understand his position.
Right, yeah. It's just, it's, yeah.
She is taking advantage of his vulnerability.
Exactly.
And, like, she's creating a victim.
Correct.
That's what it is. She's creating... Hurry up, she's taking advantage of a victim.
I like it.
She doesn't believe in victimhood.
Oh.
That's why. Fuck off, Sulin.
God. So then she writes a handwritten note from Sulin's elegy. My job is to see that S2 runs smoothly, which is Samantha 2. Knowing the particulars of your situation allows me to better perform my job. I am honored you trust me. I promise I won't let you down. From here on, let's not correspond electronically about B.
Mm-hmm.
So.
That makes sense.
It does.
Makes sense because if the hackers are in Microsoft's computer. Right. You know, but she's doing this fake. It's about Samantha, too. No, it's
right.
not.
It's not.
No,
yeah.
It's not at all.
No.
So then they start corresponding with handwritten letters.
Yep. So she basically says, because he does write back to her and said, talking about the possibility of Bernadette overdosing on pills surely constitutes harm to self. Because they read, as we said, they read her emails. She talked about how she had... thought about suicide.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Shuju's
stockpiling pills.
Correct.
That's what it was.
So then Sulin sends out an email to the Samantha 2 team basically saying that Elgin is dealing with a personal matter that requires his full attention. All meetings to go forward as scheduled. Elgin will be kept apprised electronically.
Mm-hmm.
So,
which I think is appropriate.
Yeah, definitely. She's taking initiative. I mean, it's good she's taking initiative,
yes, but
for the wrong reasons.
And she's also going above.
Yes.
Because in that email, mm-hmm. she's separating LB from everyone else.
Right, right.
You know, and that is a manipulation tactic by abusers.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Sulin, you're an abuser. You're no longer the victim, but an abuser.
Crazy. So crazy. So then she emails Audrey. So this is at this point, I'm remembering now that even though I my opinion of Sulin was definitely going down the drain, mm-hmm. I still hated Audrey more at this point. And I'm remembering why, because Sulin says, not a good time for you to stay with us, in an email to Audrey.
Mm-hmm.
Emergency at work. I've already paid Mara to pick up Lincoln and Alexander from school and stay through the week. She's in the spare bedroom. I'm so, so sorry. Maybe a different hotel, a short-term rental house. I'll help you look.
Oh, don't worry. I called, what's her name? Marla?
Mara.
And told her you wouldn't be needing her. She moved back into her apartment. Your home looks fantastic. The inflatable Santa is waving hello to the passerbys. And the windowsills are edged with snow. Joseph, Mary, and baby Jesus are stuck in the lawn. Along with my sign saying, we say Merry Christmas. I should be the one thanking you.
Dear God.
I love reading her segments.
You did a great job.
Thank you.
Especially that last sentence. That was fantastic. Oh my gosh. Just...
That was from Audrey de Sulin.
Yes.
She is fucking taking over. And those tacky inflatables.
Yes.
First of all, I love them. Mm-hmm. And I love them ironically.
I was about to say. Yep.
So good.
Oh, God.
And then those like plastic ones that
light up.
That's
what we have. Oh, my God. My mom hates it. My dad loves it. It's just awful.
Did you see the army of plastic ones on the like from my house to here? I forget what road it's on.
I don't think I did.
There's a house that literally has an army of them. And there's like Santa and the Rudolphs going upward. There's a candy cane lane.
Dear
it's
God.
Amazing. I have to take a picture of my...
You should.
Excuse me, on my way home.
You should.
Oh, so good.
Nice. It is cool to see how people decorate their lawns. I will give them that.
It takes a lot of passion.
It does. Indeed, it does. So then we get a letter from Elgin to Mr. Jessup, the Dean of Admissions at, how do you say that? Coate?
I would say Coate.
Okay. Which is the boarding school that B is going to. Mm-hmm. And he's basically saying, you know, regarding B's acceptance, he was wondering if she could. And before he didn't want her, they suggested she skip a grade.
Yeah, Elgin said no. Didn't want him.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now he's saying, my instinct was to say no. However, Ms. Loudis's wise words have stayed with me, and I now concur that it is in B's best interest that her immersion in Coate's academic abundance commence immediately. So he wants her to start not just in a grade like or the grade above, but start now.
Yeah.
Like
in after the winter break.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's doing this because he doesn't want B to be around when the what's that called? Intervention.
No.
Well, I mean afterward.
No, I think this was I think he's doing that so when she's in.
Right, that's what I mean.
Sorry, I said that afterward.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, when hopefully Bernadette is institutionalized, basically.
Yeah.
To protect her.
Right, right.
You know.
Yeah. And then he reaches out to his brother, who lives in Hawaii.
His name is Van.
Van. And he's basically saying, you know, it's been a while since we've spoken, but family emergency has come up, and he just wants to know if he can come to Seattle.
And he's very... professional in
professional
this email
and accommodating.
Van. Yeah.
And Van calls him LG and he's like, ahoy there, stranger. Sorry, but I don't think I'll be able to make it to your parts. Christmas is a busy time for me. Let's take a rain check. And then
Mahalo.
I love it. And then Elgin's like, maybe I didn't make it clear, Van, but this is an emergency. I'll pay for all the costs and, you know, all lost wages. I just need you between these dates. And then his brother comes back. He's like, maybe I wasn't the one who was clear. I have a life here in Hawaii. I have responsibilities. I just can't, you know, drop everything.
Especially if you only talk to me the first time in 5 years.
Yep. Which at first I was like, oh yeah, that makes sense. But then we learn stuff. But then he's like, I have to read this. He's like, Van, you're a fucking house sitter. Bernadette is sick. Like, so.
This is real.
Yeah.
You know, this is, you could see Elgin's, like, state of mind here.
And so finally, Van's like, all right, I'll do it for B. I'll fly in.
Yeah. So I just want to, I'm going to read Elgin's.
Yeah,
Van,
sure.
You're a fucking house sitter. Bernadette is sick. B doesn't know. And I need you to spend the day with B while I get Bernadette help. If you know, I know we've lost touch, but I want B to be with family. I apologize if a hotel offer appears brisk.
Yeah, I think so.
Brisk. My house is in shambles. The guest room has been boarded up for years because of the hole in the floor that nobody bothered to repair. And it all relates to Bernadette's illness. Come on.
Yeah.
You know, and that's how siblings talk.
Right,
so you got that shift from a very professional, like, I'll cover all wages lost. I'll accommodate you in a hotel room. Mm-hmm. And, like, he uses the words accommodate and stuff like that. Because he's in business mode.
Right.
And then, bam. We have the conversation between two brothers. Like, Jesus Christ, dude, let's go.
Right,
like,
right. Which is, that's a very good observation because it's cool to see how the writing changes and that tone shifts.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
And then Van is a dick.
Yes, he is.
And he's like, okay, I'll come, but I want this place. with a suite facing the water. And, like, I'm not going to rush out of there.
Right.
You know, that's pretty dickish.
It is. I'm not a big fan of Van.
Not a big fan of Van. Yeah. I like that.
Fan of Van.
I mean, they make it Fan of Van.
Oh, God. I just gave Brittany a terrible idea.
Sorry, Kevin. Fan of
Van. It's like, I'm not changing my mind. Let's go. All right. So then we get this thing from the doctor, Dr. Janelle Kurtz, who we saw last part as well, who's putting in Elgin's request to have Bernadette.
And, yeah.
Yeah. So she's basically just going through what Elgin has told her, mm-hmm. About the description of Bernadette and her social anxiety and everything that's happened and what she explained to him about the law.
Yeah. Explaining, like, this is for their internal records.
Correct, yeah.
And explaining that basically she doesn't trust what Elgin's saying.
Right.
You know, like, his lack or the weird timing, his reluctance to seek therapy for Bernadette. Mr. French refuses to divulge in specific information, urgency taken altogether. I have a reason to question Mr. Branch's motives and credibility.
Correct. Yeah.
Especially because he is a higher up in a company. Like, who knows if they have a prenup.
Right.
You know, like, maybe he's looking to divorce her and he wants to get her institutionalized or lock her away, essentially. Mm-hmm. Because that's what people used to do. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't like your wife. I'm talking back in the day.
Right, yeah.
Or, like, you don't like your wife or your child has a disability, mm-hmm. or someone's giving you a little trouble, so send them off to the loony bin.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. So then we get into unless there's any more you have to say about that.
No. So the doctor's like, I told him I'd come and evaluate his wife. Just to let you know, my rate is $275 an hour plus time and a half for travel. He understood that we do not bill insurance and that my trip to his business office would not be covered.
Correct. Yeah.
You know, so, like, this is, it's showing his want to do it, but the doctor's reluctance.
Right.
You know.
So we have some conversations or emails back and forth between Audrey and Sue Lynn.
Jesus
Can
Christ.
We just, can I be Sue Lynn and you be Audrey?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Okay, ready?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, you. I got gingerbread houses to decorate after school. When will you be home? I want to know when to pop the roast in the oven.
As I said, I'm super busy at work, so I won't be back for dinner. But my mouth is watering just thinking about your famous roast.
Don't think I can't take a hint. How about I get in my car and deliver you a plate myself?
How about you don't? Thanks, Lil.
It's so funny.
That's amazing.
I like, love that.
Oh my gosh, that exchange just made me crack up.
So then we get a little clip bit from B.
Yes, we do.
On Tuesday, I was in my room doing homework when the phone rang twice, which meant someone was at the gate. So this is basically. Oh, wait, hold on. Is this when Van?
I'm trying to figure that out. Dad comes home. Oh, he comes home because he's saying that Van is coming tomorrow.
Oh, okay. So they ordered food.
Yeah.
And then. I don't know why he rang the door to come in, though.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering, too.
I pushed Evan to open the gate when I went downstairs to meet the carrier, because usually when they get their food delivered, it rings twice.
Right.
I was psyched to see he had bags from this restaurant. I brought the food into the kitchen, and Dad was standing there.
Yeah.
So they had their food delivered for dinner,
mm-hmm.
Per usual. And Dad was just checking in to tell him, like you said, that Van was coming,
mm-hmm.
and he wasn't staying for dinner.
Right. And they kind of go in more about Van. He works for a Hollywood producer who's hardly ever at his home. And he has OCD because he pays Van to flush his toilets every day in his house because he's afraid that his pipes will freeze.
In
Hawaii. okay. So that's why... That's why Elgin wasn't so sympathetic to Van.
Yeah.
In his earlier emails.
And so they were bringing Van over so he could babysit. What's the dog's name?
I was gonna say ice butter, cream.
Ice cream.
Ice cream, yeah.
To dogs at ice cream while mm-hmm. they're away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so he asked B to come, or he'd like B to come with him to pick Van up at the airport. And B says she's going to see the Rockettes Christmas show with youth group. But Dad says, well, you know, this is before that, so I'll pick you up after school or at school.
Yeah.
She asks for Kennedy to come. He says no.
I don't like being in the car with Kennedy. Because she's a fucking nutcase.
Yeah. And then he sees, like, he sees a bunch of, like, boxes and suitcases. He, like, runs into it. And yeah. He says, what is this? And B said it's for Antarctica. And
this is all the stuff that, what's her name, was ordering for Bernadette.
Right.
The assistant. What's her name? I always forget it.
Manjula.
So Manjula is ordering, like, their vests and their suitcases and stuff like this. And Dad makes a very astute observation. Mm-hmm. His and B's suitcases are packed, mm-hmm. but Bernadette's is not.
Where's your suitcase, Bernadette? It's right there. And then, why isn't there anything in it? And then Bernadette's like, what are you even doing here?
Yeah, she's avoiding it.
She is, yeah.
Absolutely avoiding it.
Yeah, so she, a lot of her issues right now are just, she is just not coming to terms with what is going on. Like, and she doesn't want to tell him.
Yeah, and he gets defensive. What am I even doing here? Bernadette says, we're about to have dinner. You didn't sit down. You didn't even take your coat off.
Right.
So Bernadette is observing his weird behavior on top of it.
Right.
So she's not completely deluded.
Right, like,
right. She is in the moment. She understands.
Well, also, I think what's interesting about this book is that, and again, like, you almost think, like, it would paint a portrait of a woman who's kind of, she's not going insane, but she's having a lot of issues.
Yeah.
And I could see the, has, like,
She's separated.
Right. Like, yeah. It's not, like, this book is not being demeaning in the way it depicts these mental health issues. Like, mm-hmm. Bernadette's still there. Like, it's just for certain things that are going on, she's very delusional about.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought that was very interesting that she also is absurd. Like, both of them have their own.
And you see the writing change in B's sections.
Yeah.
And the further we go on in this story. Mm-hmm. Because in the first, like, there's often talk about an unreliable narrator.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so there's so many unreliable narrators in this because it's all from other people's perspective. We are not truly seeing it from a third person perspective.
Yeah, you're right, yeah.
So B's writing style, when it comes into these segments that are kind of tying things together, the more she's learning about the situation, the clearer we're seeing Bernadette.
Mm-hmm.
Because we start off with Bernadette being basically a manic. She's strange.
Mm-hmm.
But we get this section here where she's talking about, you didn't take off your coat. Dad's like, I have to go back to the office. I have an appointment. Bernadette, let me get you some fresh clothes at least. I have clothes at the office. Why did you come all the way home just to tell us about Van? It's something nice to, sometimes it's nice to do things in person. Well, then stay for dinner. I'm not understanding this. You know, so that's a very, like, human.
Yeah.
We're seeing Bernadette's actual personality. So all before, where we're getting pieces of Bernadette from Audrey, mm-hmm. and Su Lin and all these other people who just see her as eclectic.
Right.
She's not.
Right. She's really
not. She just doesn't explain herself.
Right. And
that's the only thing.
And what I love about this scene is how comfortable it feels. Like, obviously there's tension, but it's like you would have a conversation with your family, like, if something was happening.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I like how, like, just the way they're talking to one another, like, it's just very, it feels very real to how a family would talk to one another.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like that a lot.
Yeah.
So Dad
is being very cryptic.
He is. And this is the part where, like, I think he kind of put his foot in his mouth with this one.
Yeah.
He shouldn't have done this. But I think he just doesn't know how to. He doesn't know how to go about this.
Yeah, because he can't tell her about the potential innovation and the FBI stuff. So this is all stuff that's going on in his mind that he can't talk about. And he was just so angry at Bernadette for not telling him anything.
Right. So.
So.
Yeah.
Ugh.
So then. He leaves and they're kind of sitting there weird, like, they're weirded out. But then B's like, I guess he just really did come to tell us about Van.
Weird.
Like, weird.
Yeah.
So Then we get a report by Dr. Kurtz about Bernadette Fox. And she talks about arranging a meeting with Elgin. And talks about her skepticism, as you said.
And how it vanishes with this meeting.
Yes.
You know, people are coming in and out making comments about Samantha too, and he's answering them right away. Mm-hmm. And he's very collected, mm-hmm. and he understands everything that's going on. He doesn't seem like a person that is intentionally trying to do harm to his wife.
Right, right. And so basically they go over, again, the stuff that Bernadette has done, which is a lot of stuff that's just based on either misinformation or just lies. I mean, well, okay, let's say lies, what we think are lies. Like, did Audrey really have her foot run over?
Yeah.
So we're kind of like, that was something we talked about in a previous episode.
Yeah, I don't think she did.
Yeah, we don't know at this point, but I don't know. It kind of seems to be pointing to that, so. And it says, you know, she hoards prescription medicine. Like, it's basically taking a lot of things that Bernadette has done, misconstruing it a little.
Yeah. He shows the doctor the FBI file. Right. And everything in the FBI file says about the foot and the pills and stuff like that.
Yep.
So, again, it's a, even though these are government reports, they're not a good narrative.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So, yeah. And then...
I think fucking the doctor is like, at one point I noticed Mr. Branch was in his stocking feet, and I realized he was the man from the TED Talk.
I was just about to say that.
The one where you stick a computer chip to your forehead and you never have to move a muscle for the rest of your life.
Yep. So that's how famous this guy is. Yeah. Unlike Clea, and who's not really.
Yes. Fuck, that's a great example. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, like, in Elixir, what we talked about constantly was how Clea's mom is the senator in the United States who apparently is so famous that even her daughter is recognized everywhere.
Oh,
and it just
God.
Makes no sense. This makes sense.
Yes.
He is famous for a TED Talk. TED Talks are super popular.
Yeah.
And he comes up with something that is pretty realistic to our mm-hmm. current time frame. So,
and people don't recognize him right away.
Exactly. Yes. It's not like they're hunting him down. It's kind of just a very like,
huh. You're the guy.
Yeah. It's not like everything they're like taking though. Pictures like paparazzi.
Oh my God. Anyone. Fuck off.
Yeah.
And this is where I hated Sue Lynn at the bottom of this.
Yes, please.
I emphasized the importance of Mr. Branch getting some sleep. His administrator said she had booked him a hotel room and would drive him there herself.
I hated
that. Fuck off, Sue Lynn.
This is when I started
really
hating her. Yep.
You're ruining everything.
It's awful. It's
you couldn't
just
be a friend?
No.
You couldn't just be a friend to Elgin?
Yeah. She is just such... At this point, it changes from, like, this kind of, you're kind of wondering what her game is, to now it's like, really? What is your problem?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just awful. And then we get some stuff from B. Where they go to get Van from the airport.
Yeah.
And Van's, their interactions are interesting.
What did you say?
What did I say?
I don't know.
What I said, you... well, Van's interactions.
Oh.
What did it sound like?
I don't know. Like, I wasn't paying fully attention to what you were saying. Because I was, like, glancing on all I heard was, I love it. I was like,
oh. Well, you know, actually, Brittany, I didn't tell you I was singing. So.
It just threw me off.
Yeah.
Okay, that did not compute what is going on.
No, I was just singing. Just kidding. I just elevated my voice to a very high pitch. Anyway, so...
What about Vin? Go ahead.
He...
Or Van.
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 Van, yeah. He talks to B and he says, where's your little... It's like the classic kind of uncle thing. Where's your little girl? And then she waves and he's like, you're a big girl. My niece B is a little girl.
I'm B. No way.
High five for growing. And, yeah, it's just kind of awkward.
So funny.
Yeah. And then he gives them a bandana with the word, each one says hangover. Or wait, with a hangover bandana. What's a hangover bandana? Should I know what that is?
I think The Hangover is a movie.
That's what
so
I thought.
So I thought maybe, I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I haven't seen it.
But,
well, like a bandana.
Yeah. Yeah.
Saying The Hangover.
Right. That's what I thought, but I wasn't
sure.
Or
maybe it's a place in Hawaii.
Maybe.
Like a overhang, maybe.
Maybe. I don't know. Uh-huh. But B takes it and she's like, I'll give it to her. It was so hideous, I had to give it to Kennedy. And then she said, as Van stood there smearing chapstick across his gross lips, I thought...
so disgusting.
I was like, ugh.
So gross. Because, like, a white person in Hawaii is, like, one of the funniest things to me, like, in my mind. Mm-hmm. Because they're not meant to be there. Europeans are not meant to be in Hawaii.
That's hilarious.
And so, like, his lips are all chapped. He's probably bright red from the sun. That's and he's gross. Just living the Hawaii life. But... And he doesn't have enough melatonin in his skin to be living the Hawaiian life.
Well, she even says, I hope nobody sees me at the zoo with this guy.
It's so funny.
Yep. But real quick, folks. Well, go ahead.
I was going to say, can you also imagine being, because you're in Seattle where it's rainy.
Right.
And like, so then you have this guy probably in Hawaii, like a Hawaiian shirt.
Yep.
Dark as all hell with like bleach blonde hair, because I'm imagining him like this like stereotypical surfer dude.
Yep, same.
Chap lip and just like smearing on. You're not drinking enough water, dude.
Yeah,
get
seriously.
More water.
Okay. Water.
Water. And he's going to look so out of place in all these pale people because there's no
Van.
Sun.
Yep, basically. Van, what a treasure.
So good.
But you know what else is really good, Brittany?
Hmm.
A free trial for Audible.
Ooh,
yeah. So good. And today, folks, you get to get a free 30-day trial and a free book, free audiobook, by visiting our link, audibletrial.com/BABAT, with over 425,000 titles.
Wow.
Oh, my
God.
Wow. So cool. Wow. That makes me think of Bob's Burgers, the mom. Wow, Bobby. That's his name.
That's Eugene. Bobby is in King of the Hill.
No, his name's meaning Bob's Burgers. That's what I mean, yeah.
Okay.
I've never watched
very,
King of the Hill.
I was very, very confused.
I've never watched King of the Hill, actually.
I like King of the Hill.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
So I've never watched that one. But yeah, so let's think of a recommendation. I haven't listened to any audiobooks recently, but...
I have one.
Okay, cool.
That's on Audible. Mm-hmm. It's called... I'm listening to it now, actually. It's called Graceling.
Okay.
It's by Kristen Cashore.
Okay.
Cashore. CASHORE.
Gotcha.
And it's kind of fantasy-ish.
Okay.
So I'm only partway through. I just began listening to it. And Graceling's about people born with special... They're graced with things and they have different colored eyes.
Yes.
Yes. It's also a young adult's.
Okay, I've heard of this. Okay.
And so the main character has a grace for killing.
Okay.
You know, and so she's employed by her cousin, who's the king, to be an assassin. And she doesn't really like
doing it. I definitely heard of this. Okay.
So they have an underground resistance going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's as far as I got in the book so far, but I'm liking it.
Okay.
I think it's narrated by a full cast.
That's cool.
I'm not entirely sure. Let me look really quick. Yeah, it's full cast audio.
That's cool. That's awesome.
So I like full casts.
Me too.
They're very entertaining.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm listening to right now. So
awesome. Very nice. Very good. What's it called again?
Graceling.
Okay.
Has a sword on the front.
Okay, cool.
And it's like blues and yellows.
Blues and yellows.
It's part of a series. I'm a series listener and reader because I don't like things ending.
Hey, that's okay. Okay. I understand.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That is Audible.
Why do you have rinse and repeat at the bottom of the slide?
Why do I? Hang on. I need to go back into my mindset. Why did I write that? Our recommendation. Oh, meaning we would say this, then say our recommendation, and then once again repeat audible.com.
Oh, okay.
That's why.
I see. Rinse and repeat, Danielle. Go on.
Well, once again, that's audibletrial.com/BABAT, free 30-day trial, and a free audiobook of your choice. It's a great time. You should definitely do it. Plus,
you could also buy it for someone for Christmas.
So true.
I don't know when this is coming out. Is it Christmas?
This episode's coming out Christmas Day, folks. You're listening. If you're listening.
Oh, that's so Christmas, sweet.
So Merry Christmas,
Merry
everyone.
Christmas. I love this. And Happy Hanukkah and Happy Kwanzaa.
Hanukkah,
I don't
happy
know.
Kwanzaa.
I don't know when those go off.
Yeah. Well, I know Kwanzaa's tomorrow. the 26th of December.
Oh, is it? I don't know. Sorry, I'm ignorant to other religions, guys.
I don't know when Hanukkah is. Well, it's always different, so I don't know when Hanukkah is. Yeah. But obviously today is Christmas Day when this episode's releasing, so Merry Christmas to all who celebrate.
Almost Merry Christmas.
I'm tearing up right now. Oh my God, that's beautiful.
I did tear up in part of this book. Is it this section or not? I don't know.
Perhaps. I'm not sure. Let's see. We've made it to the part with Dr. Kurtz talking about their intervention plan.
Yes.
Oh, I know what part you teared up at because I think I did too. So yeah. We're going to get there very shortly. So let's see.
So Van comes and then we're Dr. Kurtz?
Yeah.
Is that how you say her name? Kurtz?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
To her supervisor. So they're talking back and forth. Basically, I don't want to... This type is pretty dry.
Yeah, we don't have to... I mean...
Yeah.
She's just talking more about like their plan for the intervention, certain ways to intervene.
Exactly. Yeah. What mode they're going to use.
And like the prep and stuff. So we don't need to go over that.
It's pretty boring.
Yeah. So then we get this amazing... my favorite part of the book, actually.
This is very good. Yeah. And I wish you heard it in the audio format.
Maybe. Okay. Well, maybe I'll... I think my library has the audiobook, so maybe
I'll rent it. Please do it.
Yeah.
Because this section alone made it worth it, because the person narrating it did a wonderful job switching between B's thought process and what's going on. Mm-hmm. So in this section, B is in... New York
I thought she was in New York too,
but I'm thinking about it
and I'm like, oh, I guess not.
Yeah.
I guess they're just on tour, the Radio City's Christmas Spectacular. They go with she goes with the youth group, and have you seen the Rockettes before?
No.
Okay, so I have. And when I first read this part, when she said the first part with the Rockettes was annoying, I was like, thank you. Nobody ever says that.
What's
but
the
like,
point? They're all just kicking.
Right. Like, I read that and I was like, thank you, B. And so it gets into, like, you know, the songs that they're kicking to. It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus, all that fun stuff.
Yeah.
And then they're at intermission.
The whole thing was junk.
Yeah, yeah. I love Bea so much. I love her narration.
She's very good. But yeah, they went to an intermission.
Yeah, and so then the theater goes dark. And I'll just read this part. The theater went dark. A star was projected on the curtain. The audience gasped and clapped way too enthusiastically just for a star. Today is the most sacred day for all mankind, boomed a scary voice. It is the birth of my son, Jesus, the King of Kings. And so then, you know, we start getting the nativity scene to unfold before us.
Real animals. And was like, ooh, and ah.
Yep.
And Kenny, he's like, haven't these people ever been to a petting zoo?
Which, Kennedy, I think you're missing the point, honey, but it's okay. And then it says, a big black woman walked out, which kind of broke the spell because she was wearing a super tight red dress, the kind you see at Macy's. And she starts to sing, Oh Holy Night.
Yes.
And yeah.
So we go through... B's experience with this song.
Yes.
Because they're not religious in their household.
Right, right.
And so even though I grew up in a religious household and I'm more of agnostic right now,
yeah,
listening to well sung Christmas songs still gets me.
Same.
And same with well sung church hymns.
Yeah.
You know, in any language, really.
Yeah.
Or any religion, language, celebration. If it is sung well, I'm there for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this is what's happening to B for the first time, it feels like.
It does. And it's in this moment when I was reading it, I felt like this is an experience I've had myself. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know, like, when you're talking about church music, like, they're, like, at my church, since we're both Catholic, maybe you'll know the song Table of Plenty. Come to the feast of heaven and earth.
No, I don't know that one.
Okay. Well, we have a children's choir that sings, so they'll sing Christmas songs, and then they'll sing, like, some other hymns.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, like, every time we go, it's, like, I can't not tear up, like, at just the well-sung music, like, by these kids.
Oh.
Like, or even just, like, listening Oh Holy Night. I know this is going to sound dumb, but, like, One of my favorite renditions of it is from Lea Michele from Glee. Because they sang it in Glee. Dumb. Well, yeah. Just because Glee is Glee, but I generally like their renditions of songs sometimes. Mm-hmm. And that is just, I remember in college I used to listen to that song on the bus, because I take the bus to meet my parents in the middle.
Yeah.
So it would pick me up for the weekend. And I would listen to that on my iPod, like, and just like tear up on the bus. Because it's so good. Like, and this would totally be me. I loved everything about this. I kind of feel like, should we read it?
It's a lot to read.
It is. That's why I'm like trying to figure out what we would. Yeah, no,
so
never mind.
We could read her little segments. We don't have to read the hymns.
Yeah.
But I would start off at the, she's singing O Holy Night.
Yeah.
O Night Divine. And then the chorus comes in and she didn't even notice them. 50 of them. They're everywhere.
And my favorite line is, the glow inside me started to harden, which made it difficult to swallow. And I was like, oh my God, like that.
Yes.
That description.
Yes. And then it was so weird and extreme. I got disoriented for a second, and it was almost a relief when it was over. But the music kept going, and I knew I had to brace myself for the next wave. Across the top of the stage, words appear in a digital scroll. Like the chorus, it just seemed to have materialized. Red dots glided across.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, it talks about people like raising their hands and standing up and singing with the chorus, and that is,
I feel like crying right now. I was like, yeah.
Oh, I have chills. It's also a little chilly, but I have chills. Yeah. So like, she couldn't see the words anymore because the people all in front like stood up. I stood too. Mm-hmm. Everyone's hands are raised in the air, and Kennedy put on the hungover bandana on. What, she said. And crossed her eyes. I shoved her. She is having a moment.
Right.
You know, religious or not, this is a moment.
Yeah, and she writes, it was so joyful and unapologetically religious. I realized that these people, churchy people, as Mom called them, were actually oppressed, and only now could they open up because they were safely among other churchy people.
Mm-hmm.
Like this space where, like, you're all coming together to just unite in this one belief that you share with one another.
I truly admire people who are that devoted to their religion, because I don't have that.
Right.
You know, to be so fully engrossed in the belief that a God loves you so much that he sent his son to die for us and then sin.
Well,
and we're only talking about Christianity right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's the Christian play.
Yeah. Well, but not only that. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no. I was going to say, and that whole community aspect of it is incredibly overwhelming if you're not used to it.
And speaking, so I'm glad you said that, because the community thing. When I was younger, so I was in youth group. I was raised Catholic, but I went to like a Protestant youth group.
Mm-hmm.
And I would go to church camp. And I loved church camp. I went 4 years. And the reason I loved it was a lot of, like, obviously it was great with your friends and stuff like that, but honestly, a lot of my favorite parts were the chapel times, because what we would do is we would, you know, they'd have a pastor there who would always give a sermon every day during chapel. But then we would just sing worship songs. And it was, some people would like start to cry like there. Now that gets into a little territory where it's like kind of indoctrination. But when you're singing together in big groups of people like that, people would just start crying. And I remember saying to my friend, like, why? Like, why? I don't get it. And my friend was like, it's because it was, this is probably one of the most famous songs, Here I Am to Worship.
Okay.
Okay. People would like cry during that. I was like, why? And my friend's like, because basically what that song is saying is that, like, you're admitting that, like, how much God loves you, like, and just letting that wash over you. And I was like, yeah, that's kind of true, actually.
Yeah.
Or, like, I used to listen to this group called the Casting Crows, or Casting Crowns, I think they're called.
Okay.
Casting Crowns, I think. And they are just a religious group. Oh, and they have a song, which is also really famous. I still love it. It's called Who Am I? Oh, my God. That song still gets me. That's a very religious song.
It's very funny that you said that. That was a big thing I had a conversation with the priest about once.
Yeah.
Because I struggled with my religious identity for a long time.
Yeah.
And I had went to a priest, and I was during confession, and say what you want about confession. Like, there's pros and cons to it.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't like going to confession, not because I don't mind admitting my sins, but because in the confessional is where I feel closest to God.
Mm.
And it is overwhelming. I'm like getting teared up right now.
Yeah.
So this one time I was on the confessional, I was talking to a priest, and I had said to him, he did the whole, like, you're resolved of your sins, and gave me my penance. And I said, Father, I don't understand. I don't want to forgive myself. I was like, I don't feel that I am deserving. Mm-hmm. And he goes, who are you to think that you know better than God? Mm-hmm. If God is saying he forgives you, who are you to turn that away? Mm-hmm. You know, and that changed everything.
Right.
And like, and it oddly enough, him saying that solidified me not believing in the church.
Interesting.
You know, like, so I believe in a God because that's what I want to believe in. Whether or not it's true, I don't know.
Right.
But I don't believe in the church.
Probably with you, yeah. Actually. Yeah. Our even though our experiences are different, we also seem to have gone on a similar path, like, to that. Because I, too, am also consider myself agnostic. I have been church hunting, but, like, I don't.
Church hunting, that's so funny.
That's what they call it.
Like, you behind a bush with a shotgun. Like, oh, Elmer fighting it.
I just did, like, a thing right, you
it's
know,
whatever. Church season. No.
Okay, that's funny you said that because I was thinking in my head, like, house hunting, and then you brought up, I imagine Elmer Fudd with the gun, and I'm like, oh, right, hunting, right. They're actually this guy, I'm not a huge fan of his comedy, but he will do things, like, where he'll, like make fun of the church, and he'll do it, like, with church hunting, so, yeah, like, yeah. Structure, like, a house hunting episode, and it's hilarious.
Oh, that's really good.
But I'm kind of with you there.
Yeah.
But I guess we won't get too down that rabbit hole. But and then they're singing O Holy Night.
And this is where she has her epiphany about how close she was to dying as a child.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I was baby Jesus. Mom and Dad were Mary and Joseph. The straw was my hospital bed. I was surrounded by the surgeons and residents and nurses who helped me stay alive when I was born blue. And if it weren't for them, I would be dead now. Mm-hmm. All these people I didn't even know. I couldn't pick them out of a lineup if I had to. But they had worked their whole lives to get the knowledge that ended up saving my life. It was because of them that I was in this magnificent wave of people and music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I love how this ends where she says, I felt so full of love for everything, but at the same time, I felt so hung out to dry there, like nobody could ever understand. I felt so alone in this world and so loved at the same time.
Where's that?
On page 199.
199?
Yeah. That's the end of the paragraph.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah. It's just, it's a lot. And I literally, this change, like, I was enjoying this book. I read that part and I was like, I'm kind of considering this possibly being a favorite, honestly.
At this point, this definitely edged towards a favorite. This is now a book I will re-listen to and reread.
Right, exactly.
You know?
This scene changed everything.
It was so raw.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for
so
sure.
So very raw.
I think it's interesting, too, like, that both of us had a very, like, the same reaction to it, you know? It's very moving.
And she's, like, crying and, like,
yeah.
It's so weird.
Yeah, I know.
And, like, this part, I loved Dad so much. Mm-hmm. I was sorry I was so mean to him in the car. He was just trying to talk to me, and I didn't know why I wouldn't let him. Mm-hmm. Of course, I noticed he was never home. I had known it for years. I wanted to run home and hug Dad and ask him, please don't be away so much. And the narrator mm-hmm. that was doing it was saying it with such emotion.
Really?
Oh,
I want to listen to that so badly now.
This section is so good.
Yeah. I love it so much. So good. Mm-hmm. So that's our emotional moment of the podcast.
Yeah.
That just, whew, yeah. That is a really heavy scene. So good, though. So moving on from that, though, we get to this point where I guess she sleeps over Kennedy's house.
Yes.
And so Kennedy wakes them up. And it's kind of like really quickly, like apparently... B is running late now. She needs to get to school.
Because it's the recital day.
Exactly. So, but she says Kennedy's always late to school, so her mom doesn't even care, apparently. So, okay. And so she runs to the equipment room, and the first graders are getting ready for final rehearsal. And then they enter the gym. It's packed with parents and all their video cameras.
I love this scene. It's so cute.
Me too. And this just makes you think of like being a kid again and being in those recitals. It's just awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And then let me see if I can find it. They're doing their little song.
It's about a little elephant.
Yeah, the little elephant. You have a very long nose. Yes, sir. My mama has a long nose, too.
Aww.
And tell me who. It's this little elephant. Tell me who do you love? Oh, you know it's my mama that I love. So yeah. Cute.
And B sees her mom
yes.
in the background with her glasses.
Yeah.
And trying to hide.
Yep. And she says, I laughed because I knew mom would think it was funny that now I was the one crying. I looked up, but she was gone. It was the last time I saw her.
Yeah.
So now we're getting into it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Because we know this book is about finding Bernadette.
Right.
You know, and she's been here the whole time
mm-hmm.
until around page 200.
It and is, yeah.
And we only have...
I think it's
326
like,
pages in this entire book.
Yeah, and like I said, I think I said this in part one, but when I read part one, my assumption was that part one was laying out Bernadette's disappearance. Like, I mm-hmm. thought part two would begin with her gone.
Yeah.
And so it was very surprising to me that she wasn't gone yet. So I mm-hmm. think it's very interesting how this book approached that.
Well, I also think it's interesting because part two
mm-hmm.
doesn't take place at the same time this is.
Yeah, yeah.
So part two is a... Like, the framing's weird. In
right.
This book,
yeah.
And
yeah.
It's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
So it's because it was part two Bernadette, past and present.
Right. Yeah.
You know, so there's so much in part two mm-hmm. that is not a part of this timeline.
Right.
At
exactly.
All.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting.
Okay. Yeah. Invaders. Yeah. It is interesting. So then, Oh, yeah. So this is interesting.
Yeah.
Then we get a letter from Dr. Janelle Kurtz again to the board of directors that she is resigning from her position of director of psychiatry.
Yes. Because of the events that happened during yeah. Bernadette's intervention. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, what were your thoughts when you read that?
I didn't know what to think, honestly. Mm-hmm. I truly didn't. What about you?
For me, when I read that, I thought straitjacket.
Yeah, I wondered if she got violent. Yeah.
That's what I was curious about. If she got violent or maybe more of a hostage situation.
Which made me
sad. I felt like.
Yeah.
Same. It did.
Yeah.
It was very emotional, this part. Mm-hmm. Or maybe not kidnapped, but I thought something might have been done with the Russians.
Right.
You know? Like I had no idea what to think.
Yeah.
It was a lot though.
Oh yeah, for sure. So then this is Dr. Kurtz's report on, Bernadette's intervention, which I think is the rest. Let me just make sure. Yes, it's the rest of the part.
Yeah.
So obviously there's a lot here. Basically she start, you know, basically recapping, you know, the straight gate school for girls and talking about that and how like where the house is like located and stuff mm-hmm. and
it's a step-by-step of the intervention
exactly. And so she's just saying, I arrived at the branch residence and what time she arrives and who's there. She says that Su Lin is there.
God damn it, Su Lin.
I was so mad when
I read that too.
I was like, why? And even okay, I get it, but like I feel like at that point I hate her. I was like, Elgin, why?
Well, okay. Also, Su Lin wasn't supposed to be there when Bernadette came.
No. Well, that's true. You're right.
You know, Su Lin was just dropping off Elgin.
Right.
You know, because he spent the night at the hotel.
Correct. Yeah.
You know, so he didn't have, I don't know how that is, but she dropped him off at the hotel and stuff like that. She's the one driving him to and from.
Correct.
So, we have to remember Bernadette's supposed to be at a doctor's appointment mm-hmm. right now. She went to get her teeth done.
Yeah.
Right? Correct. And so they're all setting up this intervention, mm-hmm. and they're preparing for it.
Right.
Yeah.
And at the same time that the intervention is happening... the FBI agent, Marcus Strang, is there as well.
Mm-hmm.
So just everything is happening.
All the parties are coming together.
Yes. And so Bernadette arrives. And I just her response to it, she's like, LG, who are these people? Like, yeah. Which is just like, I was like, oh, no. Like, I was afraid, honestly.
It went so bad so quickly.
Mm-hmm. So then basically the rest of this part is just like dialogue. Yeah. It's just saying who's talking.
It went so quickly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so basically they're introducing, like, Janelle Kurtz introduces herself.
And we know this is a direct transcript because the doctor was recording everything.
Exactly, yeah. Which makes sense. And so then Dr. Kurtz says to Bernadette, "We're here because we care about you and we want you to get the help that you need." And Bernadette's like, "Exactly what kind of help? Why are the police outside? And why the gnat?"
Why the gnat? So good.
And she keeps saying, she's like, "LG, please ask them to leave. Whatever this is, let's talk about it privately. I mean it. These people don't belong here." Which, like, I was like, oh, Bernadette, you should have just told them everything before. Like,
yeah, but this is her attempt to.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Like, this ambush style was not a good style.
It wasn't.
That was a really bad call by the doctor.
Agreed. Very bad call. And...
But you know what? The doctor said she's not an expert at interventions.
That's
you
true.
Know, she said that That's I'm true. Not good at these, like, but because mm-hmm. of the sensitive case of the FBI,
yeah.
they felt that this was the best way.
Right. And she, yeah.
It went so bad.
Yeah. And she even, so she, they're talking about the appointment with the dentist.
Mm-hmm.
And she says she canceled the appointment 10 minutes ago. She says, "I'm going on the trip. I'm going to Antarctica," which is true, actually. She's telling the truth, right? Do I remember that correctly?
Yeah.
Because she does,
but
yeah.
But no one believes her yet.
Right, exactly. And he says, Elgin says, "Bernadette, please stop lying."
Yeah.
And she's like, "Check my phone, see outgoing calls." So then it's interesting because she says, "Is this a joke? I really don't understand. Is this about Manjula?" And Elgin says, "There is no Manjula."
Mm-hmm.
See,
Elgin wasn't following the plan in this.
No, yeah.
Because he's so angry at Bernadette. He's just exploding,
yeah.
you know, and the doctor is trying to get things back in line. But Elgin is just blaming. And
right.
the doctor's like, "Oh, you know, let's talk about love and how much you love her and how much you want to support her."
You're right.
And Elgin's like, "She's being an idiot." And like, Sulin is still there. Sulin. Walk out.
Right.
You dumb dumb.
Oh,
like,
God. That was my least.
She's such a fucking gnat.
I hate. Yes, she is. Yeah, it's so true. Bernadette's not wrong. And so then they get into how, like, that, you know, the FBI is saying that Manjula is an alias, blah, 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 and that they are coming to Seattle to make their move. And Elgin's like, "Move? Like, what are you talking about?"
Yeah, because this is the first time Elgin's hearing about this.
Mm-hmm. So then, and even, well, I'm sorry, I read that wrong. I mean, same with Elgin, but also it's actually Bernadette who says what kind of move. I said that wrong. So then Elgin's like, "You know, you handed out her personal information to her,
mm-hmm.
like everything." And so then she's like, "Well, I haven't heard back from her for days." And we're like, "That's because the FBI has been intercepting your emails." And so then they tell her to sit down or they say, "Let's all sit down." And
mm-hmm.
Bernadette's like, "No, don't sit there." And it's wet because there's a leak.
Yeah.
And then...
this is when she's like... we slowly see her coming back to reality
mm-hmm.
in these parts. And this is the shock.
Right.
You know, this
right.
is where everything is actually like falling into her lap. You
exactly.
know, there's these strangers and the gnats there and the psychologist. And Elgin is mad. And Bernadette, it's like, doesn't know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just...
well, this
is so upsetting.
Yes. And this is when we also are learning. Well, we learned of this before, but how Manjula stole their miles for their airplane
yes.
miles. She cashed our miles. And Bernadette's like, "I'm sick about this. I'm sorry. I'm just in shock." So she truly is like,
yeah,
just so taken aback by all of this. And then
because she trusts Manjula, but now she, like, within a span
yeah.
of like 5 minutes, she's learning all this, so she needs a minute to process this.
Exactly.
And Elgin is not giving that to her.
And even, like, it's not, I mean, we talked about Sulin, but it has here, she sighs heavily.
Sulin does.
Mm-hmm.
Oh God, I want to punch her so badly.
Same. I was so mad at that part. I was like, "Are you freaking kidding me?" And Bernadette's like, "Oh, shut up. What the hell are you doing here anyway? Will someone open a window and let the gnat out?" And so Elgin stands up. He's like, "Stop calling her that, Bernadette." And then,
no, this is supposed, I know. Supposed to be in defense of Bernadette. I know you're angry, but still.
And she's like, forgive me. Could someone get the admin out of my living room?
Mm-hmm.
And then Elgin says she can stay. And this is where Bernadette's like, really? She can stay? How's that? And Elgin kind of says she's a friend. And she's not a friend of this marriage. I'll guarantee you that, as Bernadette says.
Which I was she like, fucking knew.
Yeah.
She knew.
She did. And so then, she sees something sticking out of Sulin's pants. It says it's a pair of underwear. You've got panties sticking out of your jeans.
I laughed so hard because this has happened to me.
Oh, really?
Oh, my God. Yeah. The one time I was walking across campus and like I just threw on day old jeans, you know, like I had to go to class. And so I'm walking and I felt something warm on my leg. And I was like, that was weird. And then I look at, like, I felt it slide down my leg onto my foot. And I was like, what the fuck is going on? And I looked down on the ground, and out the bottom of my pant hole was a pair of underwear. And I was like, oh, shit. And so I, like, grabbed it, stuck it in my pocket for the rest of the day.
That's hilarious.
And I was like, this is so embarrassing that I'm glad you just didn't, like, leave it on the road because I was crossing the road. And I was like, oh, no.
That's really funny. Oh, my God. At least, but nobody saw, right? Or maybe they did. You
don't
I don't know. Yeah, you don't know.
I just did it really quick.
It could have been a lot worse. It could have been a lot worse. That's good. Yes. Oh, that is funny. That is weird, though, if you felt like, what the heck?
Yeah, well, because I was sitting on them all day, you know, and so they just worked their way down my pant leg. And I was like, oh, no.
That is so funny. Oh, my gosh. Well, and even, like, her reaction, she's like, oh, I have no idea I got there.
Yeah.
Oh, God. So Bernadette does not want her there, which, you know, okay. So then Sulin says, I'm happy to go. So just go.
Yeah, on, just leave.
So then Bernadette actually tells Dr. Kurtz, she calls her Captain Kurtz, which I thought was funny, tells her to continue. So then Dr. Kurtz explains, you know, why they're in this situation, her financial situation, her aggression towards their neighbor and all this other stuff.
The pills and all that type of stuff. Everything that is a misunderstanding.
Exactly. And Fox is like, Bernadette says, are you still presenting reality to me or can I say something? Oh, and it says male voice. Get him. I don't know what that is. A panic noises. We turn to see a man in a long coat staring at his... Oh, yeah. This guy is watching a football game, I think.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I love this police officer.
Yeah?
He's just a generic police officer. Yep. I don't know why he's there.
No!
I honest to God don't know why he's there.
He says, pretend I'm not here.
Yeah. I was reading his part, and I think I just missed something.
I think I did, too.
Because I was in the shower, and I was listening to this part, and I was like... Who is he? Is he just, like, supposed to be the part of the PD?
Yeah.
And, like, escorting the FBI?
Right.
Or, like, does the police have to be there when they do an intervention in case someone gets violent? Like, what is the purpose of this man?
Yeah. I just thought that was so funny. But, yeah, at first I was like...
Yeah, and he's just, like, he goes into the kitchen, he gets a drink, and he's just, like, walking around.
Yep.
He's eating when he shows up,
it's
and,
so
like,
funny.
He's just watching a football game on his phone.
This is going to be a great scene in the movie.
Oh, I forgot this was going to be a movie. It's going to be so good.
Yep, it is. And so this is when Dr. Kurtz once again says, you know, Elgin would like to begin by expressing his love for you. And she kind of says, like, Elgin, you know?
Like, you love her.
Yeah, and that's when he just goes off. He's like, what the hell is wrong with you, Bernadette? And he goes off on all these things. And
he makes me so mad at this part.
Yeah, and he's talking about, you know, what you went through with the 20-mile house. And he says, do you realize how selfish and self-pitying that is?
I can understand where he's coming from.
I get it.
But he doesn't understand the pain it is to lose a child.
Right. And, yeah, I think he's being very... But, again, remember, he's being informed by...
Yeah.
Sulin and by
the email from Paul, like, to Paul,
things that he just doesn't, he isn't in the know about, and so he, as far as he's concerned, he thinks that he has a right to act this way, and I think if he knew, he wouldn't.
He does have a right. His feelings aren't invalid,
right? Yeah,
they don't. The anger's misplaced.
Yeah, that's a good way to say it. Yeah,
the anger
definitely
is misplaced.
Yeah. And
I think I'm just gonna say this. I think the anger stems from confusion,
right,
misunderstanding, and just like he's angry with himself as well for not seeing all this stuff. He's angry for not being in the lives of Bernadette and B. He's angry at the the fact that she disobeyed him with Manjula and mm-hmm. started a thing. He's angry with a lot of stuff,
right?
And he has other emotions mixed in,
correct? Yeah.
And sad, really. He lost his wife. Mm-hmm. He's sad,
right? You're that's like spot on. So yeah, that's very true. And I love how after he does this reaction bit, the doctor's like, okay, so it's important to acknowledge that there's a lot of hurt.
She's so bad.
Yeah, and then he just keeps going. And then the doctor's like, another example of love is a hug. Like, she just doesn't want this conflict. And Elgin just keeps going. One of the things he says is, you've gone insane, Bernadette. It's like aliens came down and replaced you with a replica, but the replica is a drag queen, demented version of you. It's like, oh, my God. And he says,
Elgin broke my heart. I couldn't stand him after this. Yeah. Well, not couldn't stand not, him, but he broke my heart.
Same. And he says, I realized, oh my God, she's going to take me with me. Me with her. Bernadette has gone crazy, but I will not let her pull me down with her. I'm a father. I'm a husband. I'm a team leader of over 250 people who rely on me, whose families rely on me. I refuse to plunge off the cliff with you. And this is just awful. Says Fox, sound of crying. Bernadette's crying. That's just awful to me. Yeah. That was the worst part. And this whole thing.
Because she still doesn't understand anything that's going on either.
Right. Because it's a misunderstanding thing. It's just, God.
She still doesn't know why everyone's so upset.
Right. And, you know? You know, he says, and for this, you hate me, you mock me as a simpleton because I love my family, because I love my job, because I love books. When did this contempt for me start, Bernadette? Blah, 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 goes on a thing. And then he just says he has to stop talking because he's just too upset. And the doctor's like, again, how about we put a pin in love and let's move on to the damage that Bernadette's behavior has caused.
Jesus Christ.
And he's like, are you joking? The damage she has caused? And Bernadette's like, yeah, I know the damage. The doctor's like, great. Next is, I forget what's next. We covered reality, love damage. So then she has to check her notes. And then there's another guy here, the Detective Driscoll. We haven't talked about.
He's the one that was looking at the...
Was that him? Okay, yeah, except
Detective
first...
Detective Driscoll is the...
Okay. Yeah, because at first it just says male voice, and now we know it's Detective Driscoll.
Correct.
Okay, so... Yeah, this one he says, this is a good time to ask, is this anyone's coffee? Put mine down somewhere. Oh my God.
He's such like the TV cop.
Yep.
You know?
So true.
The one that's been at it for so long and knows who the...
Yeah. Just ignore him. Okay. But yeah.
And knows who like the... Oh.
Don't worry.
And knows who the criminal is, but they just don't have enough evidence yet, but he knows who will eventually get him.
Yep.
Yeah. He's so funny.
Mm-hmm. And so then they just go in a back and forth, basically saying that Branch is like, or Elgin's like, I'm not going to Antarctica with you.
I'm taking B.
Right. Mm-hmm. Because she at first is like, well, the trip is canceled. He's like, no, I'd never do that to B, but you aren't coming.
Yeah.
And actually, it takes a while for her to realize this because she's like, you're going on the trip with us? That's so exotic because she says that to Dr. Kurt. She thinks the doctor is coming. And finally... she realizes like that she's not going
because Elgin's like, you need to get help right now, and she assumes the doctor is going to come with them.
Yep.
She's like, oh my God, thank you, like, I'm okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
She's okay with getting the help.
Mm-hmm.
She's 100% fine with that.
Yeah, exactly,
you know. But then Elgin's like, no, you're not getting help the way you want it, you're getting the help the way I deemed it necessary.
Right. And so she has to go to the bathroom. So she goes into the bathroom, and Bernadette's, okay, maybe you can explain this to me. She said, God, it's you. It's him. LG. And he's like, what? She says, the guy I said was following me at the restaurant that night. Oh.
The detective.
Yes, that's right. Okay. Yeah. And he says, you weren't supposed to know, but yes.
Because I think he was working with the FBI.
Right.
Okay. It's not very clear.
Yeah.
But that's what I assumed it was. I think he was working with the FBI to, like, track her movements.
Correct. Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
So then she goes in the bathroom, and it says there's a long silence. And this is interesting because this is the first time we see Elgin kind of start to doubt himself.
Yes.
Because he says Bernadette was being followed. What if she did call Dr. Nagard to cancel? Shouldn't we at least check?
Yeah, because he's cooled down enough that he's realizing that he loves his wife, you know, and like as angry as he is, he's putting some kind of stock in it.
Right, right.
In what she's saying. And this is when he goes back to the room with the suitcases.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that's right.
And notices that she also packed her suitcase. Mm-hmm. She was ready to go to Antarctica. She was ready to face her fears. She was ready to do everything that she needed to do and wanted to do. Maybe she didn't, like, everything that she was saying. This is when he's realizing everything was probably a misunderstanding.
Right.
And he just attacked her.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So they start knocking on the door for her to come out because it's been a little while and she's not answering.
No.
And so they're afraid. They're like, oh, my God, has something happened? Did she slit her wrists? Like, what's going on? And they eventually get to the door and let's see. They ask if there's a window, actually. Sorry. And the agent says it's closed and there's really no sign of what happened to her. She's out of the bathroom.
It's too far for her to like come out through the window.
Correct.
And then they're like, oh, what about, like, there's only one way in and out. And the one agent is like, well, I wasn't there the whole time.
Right,
I was curious about the suitcases. You guys made it sound interesting. Fuck off, agent.
Seriously. And so they think maybe she went into the basement.
Yes.
And so this is interesting because it's overgrown with blackberries.
Yes, the blackberry vines.
So they're kind of, the agent's like, she obviously didn't go down there. But then they hear the sound of a motor starting.
Yes.
And
sounds like a weed whacker.
Yes. And so, Mr. Branch, it says, Mr. Branch did not make it far into the basement before he fell into the blackberry brambles. He emerged bloody, his clothes frayed. His left eyelid was torn and his eye was severely scratched. An ambulance rushed Mr. Branch to the eye clinic at Virginia Mason.
Yeah.
The canine team searched the premises. There was no sign of Bernadette Fox.
Yeah.
And that's how the part four ends.
Yeah.
That was heavy.
It was a very heavy
part.
And it was short.
Yeah, that's the thing.
It was short compared to other ones.
Right, exactly. And it's just, wow. It's just...
So how did you feel about it?
So, yeah, this part, I mean, I was invested in the book before. This just wowed me. This elevated the book from, like we talked about earlier, from a really good book to, like, wow, this might be a favorite. It's so emotional. Oh, my God.
It was very emotional.
Yeah. I forgot how bad that last part made me feel. I felt awful during that.
And it was... And this is where the mystery starts.
Correct.
Yeah. You know, it's... This is marketed as a mystery book. But unlike most mystery books, the death is in the first act.
Mm-hmm.
We're in the middle of act two,
right,
and then the mystery starts, which is really interesting,
right?
Well, or is it act one? I guess it's the end of act two.
Let's think about this for a second. What,
because act three is solving it,
right? Yeah,
so this is the end of act two,
but then again, you know what, this isn't really following a simple three act structure.
It isn't.
So we could think about it that way, but we'd have to really... That'd be another episode talking about the whole structure thing, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
It is interesting, though. I wonder.
I'm just reading the reviews on the back of this because I didn't actually read the reviews on the back of our books.
Yeah.
So the very first one, the characters in Where'd You Go, Bernadette may be in real emotional pain, but Sapple has the wit and perspective and imagination to make their stories hilarious. I tore through this book with heedless pleasure. That's interesting.
It seems like, and what I love about it is, I typically, and this is just my opinion, I don't really like mysteries a lot for the reason that I find them to be very formulaic and just very, just, I never, I'm like, all right, I'm done with this already.
Mm-hmm.
But what I like about this is that, like, one of the reviews in the back of my copy of the book says, an uproarious comedy of manners. That's what the review is. And I think that's interesting because it's a mystery novel, but it seems to be that the mystery is not the focus. The focus is the relationship between the characters and why, yes, it's a mystery, but it's more about, healing these relationships and dealing with them and understanding them. And that's why I love it so much. Hmm. So.
It's a very curious book.
Yes.
And I don't think I've heard or read something similar yet.
No, I don't think so. Yeah, I mean, the only thing I could really think to compare it to, which I don't even think is a good comparison, but like the whole mystery element, like of Gone Girl or Girl on the Train.
Okay.
You know, mm-hmm. There's something about this book that makes me think of that, but I would say this is better.
The structure of Gone Girl is very similar to this.
Yes, and I've never read Gone Girl. Have you?
I have.
Okay,
yeah.
So I've only seen the movie. Mm-hmm. But yeah, just. And that seems to be like a trend today.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I wouldn't quite put this on the same level. I think this is better.
It isn't.
Yeah. Again, I haven't read it, but just what I know of Gone Girl. So yeah, but
I haven't read Girl on the Train, but Gone Girl.
Neither have I. I've only seen the movie for that as well.
Gone Girl, the framing of it is very interesting. It's very much jumps back and forth in timelines, just like this one.
Yeah.
And it doesn't follow the simple three-act structure. And I like when people are breaking from that.
Me too.
Because it just, you have so many resources available to you. Why follow the same status quo?
Exactly.
You know?
And it's difficult, of course, but it's interesting.
It's so hard. But yeah. I really do enjoy this book.
Me too. So we're excited to continue. We hope you are too, listeners. We hope you're enjoying this because this is so different from what we've done.
Tell us, listeners, where do you think Bernadette went?
Brian, where do you think
Brian.
She went? All right. So now, folks, we're going to get into our end game of the episode.
We want to thank Katie Hartung for our art. And we also want to say hey and thank you to Kevin MacLeod.
Yep.
Hey and thank you. You provided our music all the seasons so far.
Except the first one. The first one was Gabe Miller, I think his name was.
Yeah. Right. So thanks, Kevin.
Yes,
we appreciate
thank you, Kevin.
It.
Please and thank you. And visit our website, BABATpodcast.com. We're on social media, Tumblr, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. You can leave us a voicemail, as our good friend Brian did back in the Elixir days. And you can send us an email. All of it is on our website, so please check it out. We really encourage you to reach out to us because we love hearing your feedback.
And we love you.
I love you. You love me. We're a happy family with a great big hug and a kiss from me to you. Won't you say I love you too?
Fuck off!
I think this got a little, oh my gosh.
I didn't say, I said fuck off instead, and it's funny to me.
It's got a little too intimate, I think, also, so we're not going to kiss you. We're just going to maybe give you a nice hug.
I mean, I'll kiss you if you want to kiss.
Okay, well.
Brian? Oh, that's weird. I'm sorry, Brian. I don't know.